So I'm going to invite our next speaker, Gail Sobot, to talk to us a little bit about the project and the residency that she's been working on, as well as working as a writer. So Gail Sobot from Sydney, she's a writer and producer. Gail's published works include Colour Me Blue, My Longest Round, and the recent short stories in Hecate, Verity La, Mianjin, and the anthology Botswana Women Write. She was commissioned by Urban Theatre Projects to write for Home Country, Sydney Festival 2017, and has written poems around the subject of waterways for Flow, the 2019 series of dance performances by Linda Luke. Gail facilitated the Access to Arts and Body projects for disabled writers, the Writing Me project, and the Thank project in Adelaide. She's co-editor of Disrupt, an online platform for deaf and disabled writers with Verity La. She was the founding director of Outlandish Arts, a disabled-led not-for-profit arts organisation which focuses on words as the catalyst for experimentation and improvisation across various art forms. Gail served on the board of Access to Arts and currently sits on the State Library of New South Wales Inclusion Advisory Committee. She has a PhD in literature from the University of Hull, England. Please welcome Gail Sobot.
Thank you. I'll start with the social model of disability. I'm just going to start there because it informs the way I move through the world, basically. It's very central to everything I do, including my writing. And to kind of put a broad view on it, I'm constantly aware of the need and my own desire to build a world where physical attitudes, communication, and social environments reflect experiences of impairment as an expression and an expected expression of human diversity. It's, I believe, something that adds to our world. I choose to read writing that assists in creating a world that is enriched by this type of diversity and all diversity. Especially writing by disabled writers. I've neither the time, energy, or desire to read work that supports and perpetuates dominant views of disability, or tries to make impairment and the resulting disability palatable to non-disabled audiences. Having said that, I think it's also good to read books before dismissing them. So it's a bit of a fine line thing. Disabled writer Amanda Tink recently published an essay in City Review of Books called A History of Reading, Alan Marshall and Helen Keller. She talks about Alan Marshall's book, I Can Jump Puddles, and it was one of the few books available to her in Braille at school. She didn't finish reading that book because she felt that as Marshall may have been telling the truth about his childhood experiences, but he was also, according to Amanda, probably lying by omission. His life as a child with polio during the 1920s, she felt, in fact any disabled child's life, then or now, could not be that relentlessly cheery. If you go to the website of Marshall's publisher, Penguin, the blurb emphasises that this is a story of a happy childhood in which, despite, in inverted commas, despite his crippling poliomyelitis, Marshall plays, climbs, fights, swims, rides and laughs. Amanda recently decided to take another look at Marshall's writing. And she read the book, the whole book, for the first time. She writes that Marshall does, in fact, placate non-disabled audiences, but there's a lot more there, especially in the last fifth of the book, where after a year of trying, he's portrayed as having triumphed over his impairment because he learns to ride a horse. I'll read from the book. I moved my seat a little to the right in the saddle, then thrust my left hand under the saddle flap beneath my leg.
Here I could grasp the surcingle, just where it entered the flat after crossing the saddle. I could bear down upon the inner saddle pad to counter a sway to the right, or pull on the surcingle to counter a sway to the left. For the first time, I felt completely safe. I urged Starlight into a canter. His swinging stride never moved me in the saddle. I sat relaxed and balanced, rising and falling with the movement of his body and experiencing a feeling of security and confidence. Amanda Tink points out that Marshall's breakthrough comes not as retellers of his story would have it, despite or when he overcomes his impairment, but when he gives up trying to ride horses in the standard way, and he develops a method that utilises his impairment as a resource. This worked for Marshall when riding a horse, and probably in a lot of other areas of his life. And I believe utilising our impairment as a resource works equally as well when applied to our writing. What this means in our writing practice will vary considerably. It may vary according to our impairment and our particular experiences of disablement. It may vary according to form or genre. For example, life writing by disabled writers lends itself to writing directly about disability as context. Carly Finley's book, Say Hello, says in bold letters, one whole page, "I am a proud disabled woman and I will speak about it. I will make you uncomfortable with my politics and my pride." Harriet McBride Johnson, a writer and a lawyer, I've got her book here somewhere. Well, I'll get it later. writes about, she's from Charleston. She was from Charleston in the United States, and she was active in more than 25 years of the struggle for social justice and especially disability rights. She writes in her book, Too Late to Die Young, that she resists formulaic narratives of disability when she's telling her stories. She resists narratives that don't aim to satisfy the general curiosity about what it's like to live in a withered body like mine, or feed the public appetite for inspirational pep. Like all stories, they are most fundamentally a chance to ride around inside another person's head and be reminded that being who we are and where we are and doing what we're doing is not the only possibility. Fiction writers and poets may deliberately write disability as content. Nalo Hopkins, an American writer, Jamaican, in her book Sister Mine, tells the story of a pair of conjoined twins, Makeda and Abby. They're daughters of a demigod and a human woman. When the twins are surgically separated, Abby is left with a permanent limp, while Makeda is deprived of their family's defining characteristic, the ability to work magic, an ability which, for Abby, takes the form of an unearthly skill with music and rhythm. I've got some of Nalo Hopkins' work here. She's a disabled writer, and she has written numerous books, which include disability as context, and also, as I'm going to talk about a bit later, as style, in other ways of looking at disability in writing. Gail Kennedy, who will speak soon, her book, Me, Ant-Man and Fleabag. Ant-Man is a cancer survivor, and Fleabag, the dog, has a physical impairment. When we write against disablism, we may make a point of choosing not to use disablers language, or not using impairment as a tool to create villains, or shallow and pejorative metaphors, or neurodivergent coded characters as comic relief. But there may be more to utilising our impairment as a resource than writing about the specifics of biology or impairment or the material experience of disablement. the guest writer for Australian Women Writers Challenge, Honey Brown. She writes, when we create, we're tapping into our most private self. We're making our own rules and we're revealing our uniqueness. My first completed manuscript reminded me of who I was. On the page in front of me, not spelled out in memoir fashion, but in the subtext, in the descriptions, within character reactions, in the ideas fueling the story, each manuscript revealed a little more of me. And I think we can start reading disabled writings a bit more closely and seeing this. And as writers, we can start feeling comfortable with the way we do this. Our embodied experiences of the world as disabled writers may also reflect the way we organise sounds and silences, symbols and spaces, rhyme, assonance, metre, alliteration, the pace, narrative structure, imagery and the rhythm of the text, even the grammar and the spelling. I'm suggesting that disabled writers may both consciously and or without realising it bring concrete and imprecise traces of our bodies and cognition to our style of writing, to the logic and aesthetics of our writing. Our writing has the potential to disrupt current, there's that word again, disrupt current literary expectations. Bessie Head was a South African writer who experienced the ravages of apartheid and fled to Botswana, where she lived for 15 years as a refugee until she was granted citizenship in 1979. She went through long periods of depression and mental distress. Her book, A Question of Power, demonstrates something of the disability aesthetic that I'm talking about. She writes about mental distress. And her narrative structure is not a rational account of madness, but hectic and sometimes illogical, paranoid and delusional, I'm using those words in inverted commas, in terms of the conversations between the main characters. Elizabeth hallucinates during it in various ways that often don't make sense, obvious sense to the reader. She has characters, Elizabeth sees people in her life who are not real, but they're real to the reader, as they are to Elizabeth. Dan and Cello of the Brown Suit and Cello the Monk and Medusa. And they fight really noisily about power, evil and the nature of God. The novel connects insanity, madness, as two sides of the same coin, as with sanity, so-called sanity. Bessie Head's book challenges and makes a really unique contribution to African and English language literature, and it is a disabled aesthetic. Our writing is important to imagining other ways of being human that disrupt and transcend current limitations. Our writing will hopefully encourage committed and radical reading, which in turn will feed back into our writing. I really kind of encourage writers to read. And reading the writing of our peers and other disabled writers especially. Not all disabled people represent themselves in the way that is required by disabledness norm. And I think we should feel comfortable with not doing that, or with doing that, with not representing ourselves that way. I encourage collaboration where it's needed. We should know and learn how to meet our access requirements as writers, and that may mean very different things to different writers, disabled writers. And I also encourage us that while we're learning to craft our material and while we are crafting our material, to develop the confidence to write from an embodied experience. So to relax into our experience of the world. I'll quote from Nalo Hopkins here. It's going to pop over to the back end of the screen. I struggle with every day. The mental diligence and stamina needed to sit in front of the computer, open the file, start writing, and to keep doing so, word after word, until I've created the next story. A combination of learning disability and chronic health issues make that the hardest thing for me. And if I can't write, I'm not a writer. I know that's eminently survivable, but still, I can scarcely bear to contemplate it. So I'm constantly coming up with new strategies for getting to the mental place where writing is so joyous and playful that I almost can't help putting my words down. I encourage all of you to get to that place. Okay.
Thank you so much, Gail. That was fascinating. Yeah. As a poet who's very interested in concrete forms, that was fabulous. So, Gail, to maybe summarise a few of the things that Gail just spoke to us about, was about utilising impairment as a resource in a kind of stylistic way, in a literary way, in a way that refers to writing from embodied experience, and thinking about how the experience of the body informs the aesthetic decisions you make with your writing, and resisting formulaic depictions of disability which can be shallow or reductive or just not very interesting. So thinking about all the literary ways to use the experience of being in a body. Thank you so much, Gail. Thank you.